stand.
Okay, if we can get started, we've got four bills on the agenda. I'll just indicate to members of the committee that we're going to hear two of the bills, and then we're going to recess for, I hope, a few minutes to discuss the rest of the agenda. So we're going to start out with Senate File 3355, Senator Tomasoni. Now, members, originally we tried to come up with some simple bills, and things have changed a little bit. I don't think it's any secret that House File 2037, originally I wanted to have it on the agenda, and then in discussions yesterday, I don't think it's a secret that this is the going to be the omnibus finance bill. So in the case of Senator Tomasoni's bill, we thought, just because we're running out of time, I know Senator Tomasoni, the bill had been heard in your division, and the expectation was it was going to be in Senator Pappas's division. She was willing to simply have the full committee hear the bill. So we'll start. Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And also, members, because this bill has not been heard in one of the divisions, we'll allow a little bit of testimony on the bill. So, Senator Tomasoni.
You say you will allow testimony today?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and committee members, Senate File 3355 is a bill that has the security licensing fee in it, and we've had this before this committee before in another bill. The difference between this one and the last one was that the proceeds from the increase in the filing fee go to higher education, and will be used for the Minnesota State Grant Fund. The fee itself is 1/20 of 1%, and in the bill it increases the fee to 1/10 of 1%. Now, in Minnesota, all mutual funds that are sold in Minnesota are subject to a notice filing and the fee, except that there's a transactional exemption, which is a Rule 506 offering, which is something we don't need to talk about here. But Minnesota and perhaps all the other states require some notice filing and a related fee. Now, this fee is assessed on the issuer of the security, not the broker. And under Minnesota law, this fee is applicable to securities issued by an open-end management company. In Minnesota, this fee has long been 1/20 of 1% of an offering price of the proposed offering. For example, if Vanguard Global Equity has an offering price of $10 per share, and you were buying 20,000 shares, your filing fee would be $100. So what House File, well, this is Senate File 3355 does is increases the filing fee from 1/20 of 1% to 1/10 of 1%. And in the example above, Vanguard would have to pay $200 instead of $100. This would raise approximately $25 million per year. Commerce Department tells us that increasing the notice filing fee would not affect the competitiveness of the mutual funds sold in Minnesota. Since every mutual fund offer would be subject to the notice filing requirements, potential investors wouldn't be able to shop around for mutual funds that did not have a notice filing fee. At best, they might limit themselves to individual securities sold on the New York Stock Exchange, like 100 shares of Microsoft, but these are completely different financial securities and not really a substitute for mutual funds. Further, it's not clear whether the SEC imposes registration or filing fees that exceed those charged by Minnesota, and moreover, the notice filing fee is a very small amount and the total cost on the investor. So moving from 1/20 of 1% to 1/10 of 1% is unlikely to change anyone's behavior or even be noticed. Finally, there are filing fees in 33 out of 36 states. Now, there's some caps in some states, and Minnesota had a cap until 2008, which provided that all fees collected in excess of $26.4 million should be returned to the issuers. The governor proposed eliminating the cap in 2008 supplemental budget, and the legislature went around with the recommendation. If Minnesota had decided to increase that cap to $50 million or to $500 million, that would still be considered a cap. So we don't exactly know how large the caps are in other states. And Mr. Chairman, like I said, the proceeds would go to the kids of Minnesota for their for college. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
Okay, thank you. And members, I spoke to Senator Thomas only about his bill, and it members might recall that in our first go-around with supplemental finance bill, both the House and the Senate had this securities fee in it. Governor objected, and so it was not in that bill. Senator Thomasoni had made the case for attempting to pay for this bill with the securities fee. And Senator Pappas, I think obviously you're the person most conversant with what's going on with the student grant program.
Mr. Chairman.
You're the person who's most conversant with what's going on with the deficit in the student grant program.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, yeah, it's about $40 million. So I do appreciate Senator Thomasoni coming up with an approach to try to fill that deficit. We were going to hear this bill in the Higher Education Division next Tuesday, but in the interest of time, because we're running toward the end of the session and in an effort to move this bill along, we agreed to just take it up in full finance because I think it is a really important issue. I don't want to leave it to too late in the session. And, our students are looking at an average of $390 reduction in their grant, and that's the average. So there'll be some that are looking at $1,000 or more of grant reduction because of the deficiency. You know, the good news is more students are going to college, but the bad news is it's the same amount of money that has to spread over more students.
And, Senator Thomasoni, as I mentioned, because this bill was heard in your division but not in the other division, I thought it was appropriate to allow some testimony on the bill. And so I know, Mr. Straczynski, you mentioned that either you or Mr. Peach would like to testify.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Senator Pappas, I've got a dozen phone calls in my district over this. If they can't afford their update, or do you know what that's all about? You know, if you build one of those and buy one of those, it costs a fortune.
Mr. Chairman, are you talking about the securities fee, Senator Vickerman, or about the state grant?
All I know, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, is my community says you put them out of business.
Must be the securities fee, then.
Well, maybe we could listen to the testimony and we'll get some elaboration on opposition to the bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, maybe it was a different bill because Senator Pappas isn't carrying this bill, so it might be a different bill that your constituents are referring to.
Oh, maybe you're talking about window tinting.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, Senator Thomasoni, all I know is that I got six phone calls on this. What are you trying to do? I said, I'm not trying to do anything.
Could you have
the main
that
thing
many
is to keep
window?
The air safe in.
Oh, that's a different, that's a different bill.
Oh, that's Senator Anderson's bill.
That's the next bill. That's Senator Anderson's bill.
Once again, people are confusing Senator Pappas and Senator Anderson.
We look so much alike. You know?
It's really bad if they're confusing them both with me.
Adjacent districts and Senator Thomas or Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Thomas
members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm here today representing the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. And I'm glad you're having the discussion, at least, Mr. Chairman, on this legislation, because we do disagree. We oppose the legislation, and there's some fundamental reasons why. I mean, this bill indirectly affects Minnesotans a lot more than other people in other states, investors. And we're not talking about investors who are providing for the angel credit that have a significant amounts of money to invest in securities and hedge funds or what have you. These are the average investor, perhaps a lot like yourself. These are people, half of whom make less than $80,000 a year, and they're saving it saving money for a 401k, IRA simple for their pension. Maybe they invest a couple thousand a year or in mutual funds, or for the 529 plans for a mutual savings fund plan for their college student, hopeful, their grandchildren or whatever, to go to college. That's the people affected by this fee. So let's put a face on that. It's not the big, wealthy Wall Street firms making money on hedge funds, for example. So let's keep that in perspective. And it indirectly affects Minnesota firms. You've got firms, homegrown firms like Thrivent, Securian, Relator, Ameriprise. These are all firms in Minnesota who sell a lot of mutual funds in Minnesota. So it has an indirect, significant impact on them. I've heard the comment a number of times this session on this legislation that it's only $5. What's $5 on a $10,000 fund that you're investing in? Well, it does add up over time. Trust me on that. And $5 here, $5 there, pretty soon you got $25 million a year. It's $50 million. That's what the impact of this bill is. And so that's a significant amount of money, and I think you should be aware of that. But also, more importantly, it's kind of stretches beyond the realm of a fee, if you will. All due respect to my friend Senator Tomassoni, I mean, you look at it in perspective. It takes about $600,000 for the Department of Commerce to regulate this activity under this fee. That's what it was designed for, and that's what it's for in all these other states. However, this bill will raise $25 million a year, far in excess of what the cost to operate the program. I understand the intentions of the program. They're pure, they're good, they're honest. We all have been around here long enough to know that there's a lot of competition for dollars. And don't dispute the end result with what he's trying to achieve, but this is not the mechanism that should be taken a look at that, because it is goes a little bit beyond the realm of being a fee. And I think that's important. And so and I should say, let you know, and this is the most egregious situation in the United States. Senator Tomassoni did reference a number of things about caps, but I'll let Mr. Peach speak about that for Ameriprise. But this is the most aggressive fee in the United States as it relates to regulation of this industry, of these types of securities. Texas is the number one. We're now not tied with Texas, but what's different, not only tied with Texas, we pay this fee every year. When they register these securities, they have to be registered every year to be sold in Minnesota. Other states don't do that. You buy a block of these mutual funds and register those with the state. You can sell them over a period of several years. Minnesota, those mutual funds, that securities have to be registered every year. So it's an ongoing thing. So it does make us a little bit worse than everybody else. So I urge you to just think about the impact on this habit. It does have an impact on real life, real people. I'll turn it over to Mr. Peach. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Peach. I am with Ameriprise Financial Advisors. Many of you may be more familiar with our firm under our previous names of American Express Financial Advisors or IDS Financial. We are a homegrown company. We started here in 1894 and have had the good fortune through hard work to grow to be one of the largest mutual fund companies in the country. We have 90,000 individual retail consumers who have mutual funds in the state of Minnesota, and I'm here on behalf of those people today. The mutual fund fee is passed on to the individual shareholders of the fund. It's not absorbed by the company. It doesn't go into a magic absorbing department and go away. It comes out of the returns from the bank accounts of the people of Minnesota. This bill will take $25 million out of the pockets of Minnesotans who are putting aside to save for retirement, a rainy day, a cabin, their kids' education. It's taking money out of the pockets of our individual investors, and that's why we're here today. We're here on behalf of those folks. One of the things that has come up in a number of these hearings is that other states have caps, but there aren't a lot of isn't a lot of information presented about what those caps are. Fortunately, it's all statutory. I have the information. I can tell you 35 states have flat mutual fund filing fees that range from $100 to $2,500. There are 7 states that have the 0.1% rate, which is what this bill would bring us to, 7 states. Out of those, all except for Texas have a cap of between $1,000 and $2,000 for the filing. Minnesota would have no cap. To give you an example of what that means, all these things, these are all numbers, they're percents, they're figures, but to tell you like on a real life basis what this means from a company like ours that's selling mutual funds, if you take, for example, a $100 million diversified bond fund, which is a typical fund for us, it's very good for steady returns. If you file those with 3 basic class shares in Minnesota, under this proposal, it would cost the shareholders of that fund $100,000. File the same exact filings in Wisconsin, it would cost the shareholders $18,000. In North Dakota, it would cost $375. This isn't just a little bit it putting us into a category that we don't know what's going to happen. This takes $100,000 in Minnesota for the same activity that Wisconsin takes $18,000 for and North Dakota takes $375 for. That impacts our shareholders. What the worst part about this is that companies that have grown up here, that have large sales forces, that continue to invest in growing their business in Minnesota and put money into that sales force are disadvantaged because we sell to more Minnesota consumers than we do to other states because this is one of our home bases. So when you have more people that are paying higher fees for your mutual funds, it makes the overall expenses for that fund higher than our competitor funds. And when you look at those funds, when we have a higher expense ratio, and Money Magazine and Fortune and the Wall Street Journal calculate our rate of return compared to our peers, our rate of return is lower because we have higher fees because we sell to more Minnesotans. And a lot of people buy mutual funds not because they've been able to do the research to figure out exactly which one is best. They pull out the rankings to see which fund was number one, which one was number two, which one was number 25. People put money into funds based on that. And so if this bill drags down hometown company returns, it's going to hurt our firm and not just our individual shareholders. It makes it less attractive to register funds in Minnesota, to do more business in Minnesota when we're already trying to do as much as we can here. We have $500 million in payroll in Minnesota. We have 6,000 jobs. We give every one of our employees that lives and works here $5,000 a year in tuition reimbursements so they can further their education. We give grants to universities for scholarships. We fund nonprofits. We believe in this state. We're not saying that the ends of this bill are not worthy and great. We just don't believe that we should take the money from the shareholders of our mutual funds who are saving for their future and pass it on to fund this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peach. Questions for
Mr. Chairman,
witnesses?
I'm not sure about the witnesses' statistics, but according to the Commerce Department, 30 states have a filing fee of 0.1%, and that's one of the reasons that we've gone to 0.1%, because we've been at 0.1% for quite a while, and Minnesota hasn't had a cap now since 2008, and so we're just sticking with current law as far as the caps are concerned, and then trying to get to 0.1%, where 30 other states are already at. And what we're looking at is about a $50 billion industry, and so the numbers are big. And Mr. Szczesinski is right. On $2,000 investment a year, this would increase the fee from $1 to $2.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do agree that it's a very large industry. It's a $50 billion industry, according to those figures. This isn't coming out of the industry. This is coming out of the pockets of Minnesotans. $50 million a year from regulation for a fee that costs the state $650,000 to put into place. So that would be like going and paying $2,000 to get your driver's license. This is so disproportionate to what the Commerce Department is saying it costs to regulate, and it's not coming out of the industry. It's coming out of the pockets of individual Minnesotans. And I actually have a chart that lists by the statutory sites for each of the different funds, or each of the different states. Every state has a filing fee. If we could hand this out, it will show you, contrary to the information that was supposedly provided by Commerce, we can tell you exactly what the other states have and exactly what the caps are. And when you look at it, you'll see that it's not just putting us in line with 35 other states. It puts us very far out of any sort of parity with other states and puts us in a race to the bottom with Texas. Nothing against Texas. Love Texas. But not where I would like to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Sarah Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I understand what a cap means. Does a cap mean that if it's 1/10 or 1/20, it goes up to a certain amount? Like the traditional understanding of a cap is that you can, you'll go up, and anything beyond that cap isn't taxed, or the fee doesn't apply. So
Chairman,
could
Senator
you just
Stump,
elaborate
can
on that?
Mr. Chairman, I can take a shot at that, too. Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, the cap that we're talking about is the amount of money that is actually paid in regards to the filing fee. And Minnesota had a cap at $26.4 million. So once the $26.4 million was reached in filing fees, the issuers were then given refunds on whatever the fee they were paying. So we found out that everybody was paying this filing fee, and we were actually giving monies back to these big companies because they would pay a filing fee that they thought they were supposed to pay, and then find out that Minnesota had collected this $26.4 million and then refund the issuer the filing fee. I'm not sure that that issuer gave that filing fee back to the investors, but what ended up happening is I think we ended up generating $35 million for the general fund in the state of Minnesota by taking off the cap. And so the reason for going to 0.1% is because it was consistent with about 30 other states in the country. So that was the impetus behind it. And then the extra money generated by that increase has been dedicated to a state grant program for the college kids of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, so if there was no cap, then that fee would be continued to be assessed, and the revenues,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, there is no cap in Minnesota now. There was a cap in Minnesota. The governor recommended taking it off in 2008. And I think Mr. Mossman can help me, but I believe that it ended up going generating $8 million over the $26.4 million that year. So there was about $35 million generated by the filing fees, as opposed to just $26 million. The $8 million would have been refunded back to the issuing companies.
Mr. Chairman, so... We're proposing to increase the fee and then reestablish a cap. Or
I don't believe we reestablish a cap. No.
Okay.
All right.
And Mr. Beecher, if I could ask, just looking at what you had distributed, where you've got states that have flat fees of Idaho is 300, Connecticut 500, Massachusetts is. I think it says flat fee of $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the impact on individuals in those states?
What happens with mutual fund fees is we take the fees from running a fund and we aggregate them all into, like, for lack of a better word, like a fee bucket. And then we divide and assess that against all the shareholders of the fund at the end of the year. So everybody pays for the registration fees in the states.
But with this proposal where you raise it by the other percent, mm-hmm. won't individuals in Minnesota, if in fact everything is passed on,
mm-hmm.
won't that be still significantly less than these other states that have very large flat fees?
Several times.
No, actually, the other fees will be less because their fees are capped and flat as opposed to the fees in Minnesota, which would not be capped.
Which are not capped?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think that's the way to look at it. You know, there is no cap. But when you double the fee, instead of, as Mr. Peach testified, in Minnesota they pay $100,000 because there's no cap. However, in North Dakota, because there's a flat fee, or in Wisconsin where there's a cap, in Wisconsin they pay $18,000 for the same fund.
So
$375 in North Dakota. Cap actually restricts you to so many dollars. It's a limit.
So how many states do not have a cap like Minnesota?
Texas does not have a cap, and Minnesota does not have a cap currently either.
Okay. All right. Further, Senator Roblin.
Well, Mr. Chair, don't we have something in statute that says that fees are not to be higher than the services that they provide and that we're not supposed to be making profit or revenue off of the fees charged? And I'm a big supporter of higher ed, but I'm still trying to figure out the correlation between this fee and higher education, and I'm struggling here, to think that the fee is not directly related to the service, then why are we charging a higher fee?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've stated this a couple of times now. Minnesota is one of the few states that only charges 1/20 of 1%. Over 30 states charge 1/10 of 1%. And it seemed, in order to be in line with these other states, that raising it to 0.1% would make sense. And basically speaking, that's the reason for it. Yeah, obviously, the other reason it raises some revenue, and it is being dedicated to the post-secondary education for the Minnesota State Grant Program. So it's going for a very good cause, number one. And number two, it puts it in line with other states. Now, this is according to the Commerce Department. So, and I think, you know, when you talk about a $100 million fund, how many states have the $100 million fund that Minnesota has? And so the fees may not be apples to apples here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can speak that we sell $100 million funds in many, many states. It's not an outlier for us. We have funds that are substantially bigger. We have funds that are smaller. It's not a crazy made-up number. And with regard to the other states that have the 0.1%, it's statutory. I can tell you who they are. There are not 30 of them. It's Arkansas, Iowa, Louisiana, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Rhode Island, and Texas. And they have caps between $1,000 and $2,000. Per registration. So this is not putting us in line. This does not put us anywhere close to in line with other states. This puts us in line with Texas for being the single highest state to register mutual funds in. And Texas actually has an advantage because their funds are good until sold and ours expire every year. So this is not just moving us in line with other states.
Senator Wicker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni, you mentioned you had guidance from the Commerce Department. Do they support this, and presumably the governor as well, as we look at end game here?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wicker, I'm just reading a memo from the Commerce Department, so that's where I'm getting my information from. I haven't personally spoken to the Commerce Department.
Are they here?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't see anybody, Senator Weaver. Further discussion on the bill, Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, you know, money is fairly portable. Might we see people registering their funds in other states?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, money is portable, and what will happen is people need to, you need to register shares, your funds in the states where you're actually selling them. So to the extent that we sell to Minnesota consumers, we will have to register them here. But what will happen, and what has happened in Wisconsin when they raised their cap to $15,000, funds look at the sales of each of their funds, they look at the records and look at the potential sales, and then they decide to register fewer funds in the state. So we will potentially see people not registering a variety of fund options here for our consumers, so the pool of available options for Minnesotans will shrink because it's so expensive to register here for individuals. And so it will have an impact on the options available to people.
Okay.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the purpose of the fee in this process, and how does that affect me as a stockholder or whatever I might have?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the fees on mutual funds are assessed as part of the state regulatory scheme for regulating mutual funds. And each state has an interest in regulating the funds that are sold to the citizens of the state. The states typically want to make sure that they know which funds are being sold and registered with the State Commerce Department, typically, or the Securities Administrator. The registration fee itself is a way for the state to recoup the cost of providing that regulation. So in Minnesota, the Commerce Department tells us it costs $650,000 to provide the registration of each of the different funds. In a state where fees were actually based on what it cost to do the regulation, this would only raise $650,000. Under this proposal, it will raise $50 million. Those fees, though, that we pay the state go into the expense ratio for the fund that we sell the individual consumer. So as a shareholder of one of these funds, you're paying a little bit more because we had exponentially higher registration fees in Minnesota.
Further discussion or questions? Senator Dill. I'm sorry, Senator Foley.
So we're still haven't quite figured out why or what this fee does. This is supposed to pay for the total cost of the operation?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the fee itself is set by the state and assessed. It's just a charge that they have for registering the share funds. It's honestly a way for the state to track all of the funds that are sold in the state. It's a way for them to register it, and they have to offset the cost of that to the Commerce Department, which is $650,000. Over the years, it's been piled on to raise additional revenues for the state. So the fee itself is really just supposed to be for pure registration. It's grown exponentially in Minnesota over the years to cover much more than that. So as a shareholder of a mutual fund, you're paying for part of the general fund operations of the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know who handed this out, but this is a pretty interesting sheet because it shows that Minnesota has a $100 filing fee and 1/20th or 1%. But if you look at some other states, Louisiana has 1/10 to 1% plus a $250 filing fee with a minimum of $100. Iowa, $250, 1/10 to 1%. Illinois, $1,800 plus $180 for each one. Delaware, half a percent, a minimum of $200. All these states are more expensive than Minnesota. And quite frankly, these things are. This is a pretty good chart to indicate that Minnesota is not out of line, even with this new bill that we have. And I will tell you that right now, Minnesota is collecting over $25 million with the fee that is imposed in Minnesota. So I don't think this is out of line, this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would ask you to look at the chart that Senator Tomasoni just referenced. He did cite part of the details, but not all of them. The states that he cited have maximum caps, too, so you can't look just at the percentage. Iowa has a maximum cap of $1,250. Louisiana has a maximum of $1,000. Minnesota has no maximum. That's where we get into the crazy part. That's where the $100,000 comes in. And if you're looking at a $100,000 registration fund here, and in Louisiana it's $1,000, that's out of whack.
Okay. Senator Dillon, then, to be honest with members, when this agenda was put together, I thought it was going to be a fairly simple agenda. Yesterday it became a very complicated agenda. So we have session in a couple of minutes, which obviously won't take place. But Senator Dillon?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm trying to figure this out, too, and I'm just wondering how this regulation – does this regulation that's being paid for here have anything to do with keeping people from investing in Tom Petters or Bernie Madoff operations?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't believe that this has anything to do with Tom Petters or Bernie Madoff. This has to do with really registering funds in the state. The securities industry is regulated on the federal level as well as the state level. This is just a mechanism for states to ensure that they know what products are being sold to the consumers of their state. So it's more consumer protection, not in that they approve the fund as being good or bad. They just record the sales and cash the checks.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 3355 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni and Ms. Pietrzyński. Okay. I have what I believe is a very brief bill, and if it's not, I'm shocked.
Do you vote against that?
Is that a referendum on Wall Street?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's
right.
What you said before, you know. I'm on Wall Street.
This is us.
Yeah. Mutual funds and ship are here.
We all are mutual.
Yeah. You know, it's out of your payroll production.
It's having you
Mr. Chairman?
No, against it.
The committee has before it now House File 2037, Senator Cohen.
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman.
Got the wrong agenda.
Believe me.
Correction. The committee has before it now Senate File 2567, Senator Cohen.
And, Mr. Chairman, I believe there's a division report. I'm not sure if Senator Berglund's here, if I might be allowed to move the division report.
What
Senator Cohen, you're moving a division report?
Yes.
Senator Cohen has moved adoption of the division report. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the division report is adopted. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This, I believe, is a simple bill. It deals with the ability of...
Senator Cohen, would you pause just a minute? Members, it's difficult, more difficult to hear in this room than in 123, so we have just a little more quiet. Senator Cohen, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill deals with nursing home rate costs relative to food purchase, and because I basically have had almost no sleep the last three nights, I'm not quite sure what I'm saying. I'm trying to get warmed up. I'm going to ask Mr. Roberts from the Jewish Community Relations Council to offer some extremely brief testimony. I'll indicate that I had authored the original bill 20 years ago. I think it was my first year, or even a little bit more, my first year here in the Senate, which allowed an adjustment for rate increases. This bill just simply changes, strikes increase, allows for adjustments so to reflect either increases or decreases in nursing home rates. So if I could ask Mr. Roberts just to add a little bit of explanation. I don't believe there's any opposition to the bill, and there's no cost to the bill.
Mr. Roberts, welcome to the committee, and would you pull that microphone just a little closer to you? Thank you. And proceed.
Sure. I suppose for the purposes of the record, my name is Ethan Roberts. I'm the director of the government affairs at the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify this morning. I'll try to be as brief as possible. As Senator Cohen indicated, back in 1987, the initial bill was passed to allow for an adjustment for nursing home rates, this is the MA rate, to take into consideration raw food costs, which are higher because of issues relating to religion. This statute, there was an additional statute added in 2001, and actually it was passed off the floor of the Senate unanimously, 60-0, almost 9 years ago to the day on May 10th, 2001. Happens to be my birthday, but I wasn't obviously aware that that was happening at the time. And that statute, which is the statute we're seeking to amend today, simply allows for increases. At that time, I don't think anyone was thinking that nursing home rates could ever be decreased, but unfortunately times have changed. And so all we're simply trying to do is change the word increase to adjustments. There's an additional piece of this which was suggested by the Department of Human Services, but essentially it would allow this language, this bill would not protect Shalom Community Alliance in particular or any agency that got this increase from any cut whatsoever. That's a really important point to make. If there was an across-the-board cut, for example, the governor proposed a 2.5% cut to nursing facility rates. If that were to happen, we would be cut 2.5% like anybody else. So that's an important point to take into consideration. It's only if there was a particular kind of cut designed so that more expensive nursing homes were cut more. And so what the initial idea of this legislation was, if there was going to be a rate increase and more expensive nursing homes would get less of an increase, now it would work in the reverse. So if there was a rate decrease. And so basically, if you use a tax analogy, to some extent, it's lowering our basis for that small amount, that on average $1.50 a day we're talking about for raw kosher food costs. And actually, the word kosher appears nowhere in the bill. That's an important point to make. It would protect a smaller community, any community which has to purchase more expensive raw food because of religion.
And Mr. Chairman, I was just going to make the comment that obviously when this original bill passed, it affected maybe only two, Mr. Roberts indicates, two homes in the state. And certainly with the change in the state's population, would expect that there'll be this problem with other nursing homes over the years. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the essence of the bill. Again, I don't believe there's any opposition. So I don't know if committee members have any questions or
questions for Senator Cohen or Mr. Roberts. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, the rates are usually a percentage, aren't they?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I believe so, although I'm not the expert on nursing home rates.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, the issue of more expensive or less expensive a rate would if it's applying to a percentage of those those costs
would be somewhat more for more expensive. I mean, there is an adjustment there, if you cut a percentage, it still is going to float a little bit based on what those costs are.
But Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, this bill doesn't change. That's there right now.
I know.
So this doesn't change that.
Picture an array. You can place different nursing homes on this array. Let's say our rate would have been $100, because 100 is easier to use than 247. It would have been $100, but for this $1.50 food cost. So now we're $101.50. Let's picture in this array that nursing homes that are $101 are cut 3%, and nursing homes which are $100 are cut 2.9%. That's what we're doing.
Further discussion on Senate File 2567.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no further discussion, I move that Senate File 2567 as amended be recommended to pass.
Senator Cohen has moved that Senate File 2567 as amended be recommended to pass. Discussion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is approved and sent to the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, what I'd like to do at this point is, as I mentioned, call for a recess. I'd like to have the majority members go to 118. We have just gotten copies of, a couple of minutes ago, of the Delete Everything Amendment I'm going to present for my other bill, and I'm asking that it be distributed to members, and if members would take it with them to our caucus, and Senator Frederickson, if your members would like to caucus as well, you're happy to, you could certainly use 21 or my office if you'd like. So I don't know if you and Senator Senjum want to.
Well, what you want us to recess to the call of the chair or to
this will not be long, but I because this has been prepared overnight, I need a few minutes.
Okay, so why don't Republican members just hang around here for a minute and we'll decide.
Okay.
What we're going to do, and the Senate is in recess. It'll be a short time as to the call of the chair. The Senate is in
I just have a question. Do you know, are we not going in? Are we not going in at 9:30 then?
We're
into
call
session.
Right now.
Oh, we are under
well,
call.
Well, I instructed. I had my office and or one of the staff instruct the majority leader's office that we need to recess on this, and I'm not sure when we'll start the session.
And I
ask the DFL members to get up to 118 right away.
Well, Mr. Chair, so the intention is to come back and then pass this bill before we go up to session.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
This is a solution.
We bring this with us?
I think so, like 2 seconds. We're going to be wasting paper. The stars are not aligning.
Again today, if it's taken up again, it will be on another day.
Madam Chair, could you repeat that? We can't hear anything over here.
Too much noise.
I said for those people who might be here for the ice arena bill of Senator Anderson's, we will not be taking it up again today. If it gets taken up again, it would be in the next couple of days. We are now going to take up House File 2037, Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. House File 2037 is the bill that the Senate intends to use to deal with what is an unprecedented budget and an arguably constitutional crisis in the state. House File 2037 is originally a bill that was authored by Representative Solberg and myself. It was a bill that deals with the Special Revenue Fund to make sure the Special Revenue Fund is separated from the General Fund. Obviously, we have been looking for a bill, to be blunt, to use as a vehicle for what needs to be done. Let me just underline for members that the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock. It is now Saturday morning at approximately 10:30. So obviously events have moved fast. And I felt that we were moving toward a reasonable end of the session. There were questions about the federal FMAP money. I've become more and more questioning as to whether that money ever comes. And we had begun discussions about how to take care of that. That was going to be handled, I thought, fairly simply. This obviously is an entirely different story. And as a consequence, things are moving fast. I recognize that there is often discussion in this place about, you know, vehicle bills and you know, trying to do things quickly. I would hope nobody on the committee would question that events have moved at lightning speed and calls for quick legislative action. So we have taken House File 2037, again, a relatively simple bill. I would like to have in front of the committee the Delete Everything Amendment. I should point out this committee has not been heard in any other division or committee. It was a bill referred directly to the Finance Committee, so it was not taken out of another committee. But obviously the finance divisions are simply, although significant, are at least organizationally simply subcommittees of the Finance Committee, in effect. So the fact that it was not referred to another division is in and of itself not a defect or a flaw in the process. So I called the bill up in terms of the full committee to utilize. So, Madam Chair, to put these issues in front of us, and then I'll explain what we have in front of us and why we have this in front of us, I would move the A1 amendment, which is the Delete Everything Amendment.
Senator Cohen has moved the A1 amendment. Do you want to go through and explain the amendment, or you want to adopt
I'm wondering if we could adopt the amendment and then work from that.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
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 Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, generally in a case like this, won't we explain the amendment and have the discussion prior to adopting it?
Madam Chair, Senator.
Is this the first time the bill's been heard?
This is the first time the bill's been heard, Madam Chair.
So this is by way of an author's amendment. So let's vote on it. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, the problem we have is $2.962 billion based upon the Supreme Court action. And let me indicate that Mr. Mossman and his House counterpart, Mr. Marks, I think all of you know Bill Marks, Mr. Mossman and Mr. Marks spent a good part of the day Thursday at Management and Budget going through budget numbers with the commissioner's staff to make sure we're all working from the same numbers. Don't necessarily have the same solution, but we're all working from the same numbers. So $2.962 billion encompasses everything. It encompasses the Supreme Court decision and the consequences of that. It encompasses what we thought was the remainder to be solved during this year's session, which was the $536 million. And that was going to be taken care of through, Madam Chair, your conference committee, the Health and Human Services Conference Committee. We weren't sure, and so I'm not sure if there was going to be a very, very small K-12 budget figure at this point. That's not included in this. And the 408. And I anticipated we'd have to have some solution, whether contingent or not, relative to the 408. But the $2.962 billion includes everything. And so that's the total solution we're trying to affect with this bill. Now, as members can well imagine, there are a lot of moving pieces to this bill, and a lot of things that we've been wrestling with for the last couple of days. I think I've hardly been in my seat on the floor of the Senate the last couple of days, just kind of bouncing back and forth. So we've worked hard to try to come up with something that we think works. Now, let me indicate that what is not going to be part of the solution in House File 2037 is Senator Berglund's Conference Committee report. That target has been set at $114 million. We are hoping and expecting that conference committee will finish tomorrow night, by tomorrow night, so that House File 2037 will be actually $2,848 million of the 2.962. And certainly I don't want to, and I think Madam Chair and Senator Senchum, Senator Pogemiller told me that he spoke to you about the process, that we intend to take this bill up on the floor Monday, I don't know at what time Monday, and present it to the full Senate. There are a number of things relative to the governor's unallotments that are presented in this bill, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There's other language that the governor has requested, and again, I think irrespective of party ideology or anything else, all of us would agree that what we're facing this year is unprecedented. I mean, it's been an unprecedented several years. This one just kind of it's more than the cherry on the sundae. It goes a little bit beyond that. But certainly the events and where we are unprecedented. So we're trying to encompass a lot of what the governor has requested. There are certainly some pieces in here that the governor has not requested. Let me offer just kind of the broad strokes, and then I'll go through the bill. We have in here, and you'll see in Article 2, cash flow. That is another bill that Representative Solberg and I have authored. And that's legislation requested by the administration, and rightfully so, to deal with where Minnesota's cash flow problems are. We've had a lot of extensive discussion, both in this committee and then in the Legislative Commission, relative to the cash flow problems. They continue unabated. And in fact, the sense from discussions with the governor that had taken place with the leadership is that the cash flow problems might be even more significant than, at least at a legislative level, we've realized over the last several weeks. So this encompasses word for word that legislation to at least allow the administration some flexibility in dealing with the cash flow issues. Second, this bill adopts the governor's proposed delay in school aid payments, but codifies it in shift form as the governor has requested. Obviously, I don't think any of us at the table are a fan of shifts, but certainly we don't get out of this without some type of codification of the shift. Now, we're not quite sure where things go over this next year, and I am not the expert, so I'm going to defer actually a little bit to Senator Stumpf, to Mr. Mossman, and Mr. Nauman, relative to a little bit more detail about the shift language, because we do it in the hopes of retaining some viability for next year with the shift. The other article, the other major article in the bill,
Madam Chair,
is
to that point.
I'll get to you.
Okay.
The other major article in the bill, members, is adoption of the governor's cuts to the state agencies. Now, there are a lot of major cuts that are not in here, and we're trying to work through this. But that's not reflected in this A1 amendment. I'm going to be honest with members. You will probably see a lot of that, most of that, on Monday on the floor. But again, things are moving very, very, very quickly, and there's not been the time for a reconciliation of all of this with such short notice. I want to make it very clear. Staff was here through the night putting this together. This changed dramatically between 6:30 and midnight, and I actually thought we were going to have a more complete bill this morning to present to this committee. I don't have that. Again, this, for all the reasons I've stated, is a work in progress. Having said that, we do have the agency cuts. And when I say agency, I mean the cuts to the agencies, along with some of the smaller programs within the agencies made by the governor last year. And obviously, with the Supreme Court decision thrown out on Wednesday. There is then an article that is the original bill, which, as I said, just simply delineates the difference between the general fund and the special revenue fund, and it makes a statutory change, a two-word change, I believe. And the last article is a revenue article. We don't know yet the exact details of that. To be honest, that is something that Senator Bach is working on as we speak, where we reflect some of the some incoming revenue to try to make everything balance. And I'm sorry, I also forgot to mention that we do have reflected in this the governor's county aids cut. Again, we're trying to work through the numbers on the LGA cut. It's not my intent, Madam Chair and members, to get into a discussion in this committee relative to what's going to happen with the revenue piece. What I can tell you is that it's going to be a relatively small part of this bill. I think the target for that piece of it is, I believe, $433 million, I believe, give or take. And so of the $2.962 needed to balance the budget, we're looking at whatever that percentage is, less than 20% through new revenues. So that is not something that this solution is not meant to be, if we need 2.9, that we're going to do 2.7 through new revenues. This is cuts and shifts. I'm not particularly happy with this bill. I'm not particularly happy with the situation we find ourselves in. It's not my intent this morning to get into a lot of political dialogue. I have said repeatedly, members publicly, privately, I think to this committee, this crisis is precipitated by the credit collapse of September 2008. We can argue about what has happened subsequent to that in terms of state action, inaction, or otherwise, but that doesn't change the fact as to where we are this morning. Now, that's an overview of the bill. I'm happy to get into more detail of what's in here. I think in particular members might want to hear. I think the agency cuts in here, and I should mention, again, staff was working through the night on this deal. And in fact, we finished our caucus and delayed a few minutes because Mr. Mossman had to make some changes in the spreadsheet to make sure they accurately reflected the fact that this bill is a 1.873 solution of the total problem. And the one-page spreadsheet, I think, is very clear to members as to where all that comes from. But I want to assure members that this has not been an attempt to spring anything on anybody. The bill, in fact, I'll just add parenthetically, one of the remarkable things about this bill is that Mr. Mossman actually got to the building a few minutes after I did this morning, reflecting the fact that he was here almost all night. So this is something that both majority and minority members of caucus members of this committee have seen at the same time. I did not see the final bill or the first draft of it until just before I walked into room 15. Spreadsheet was just made available, a few minutes ago.
Senator Cohen, do you want Mr. Nauman or someone else explain that portion of the bill? Maybe
he should come
up to the table and.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, maybe we could have Mr. Nauman
with you,
Mr. Nauman join me along with Mr. Mossman to have some discussion of how the shift works. I think a lot of the rest of the bill is fairly self-explanatory.
Madam Chair and members, Eric Nauman on the Senate Fiscal Staff. The shift discussion, I'll work just through the Article 3. That's primarily shift adjustments. Members will recall that in the unallotment process, the property tax recognition shift was, in a sense, mimicked but made permanent. It did not snap back in fiscal 12. There was about $564 million in savings in that initiative under the unallotment process. This bill, on line 5.23, members, you'll see there's a 48.6% recognition, which is the governor's budget recommendation, and that establishes a slightly higher recognition shift. So under the language of the bill, the property tax recognition shift is made permanent. And that's done in permanent statute. It was recommended by the governor. There have been a whole series of amendments and bills introduced to do exactly what's contained in this bill. Mr. Chair and members, that largely is the contents of Section 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of that article. There's some of those sections are merely technical adjustments. Section 7 and 8 of are adjustments that reflect some minor cuts to a couple of programs that also reflect a mirror image of the unallotments. And then Section 9 is a reduction to the agency. And I think what's probably the most important is to reference line 7.15 and 7.16. This is the aid payment shift. And members will recall that under the unallotment process, because you can only unallot during an existing biennium, that the governor's reflected a shift of a 73-27% nature, but could only do so in fiscals 10 and 11. And then in fiscal 12, the shift returned to the 90-10 payment schedule and was essentially bought back. This bill reflects that as well. It's done in law in the bill. So that's why I'm highlighting those two lines. Members will see that the 73% number is what generates the 73-27% shift. It's effective for fiscal 10 and 11, and then returns to 90% in fiscal 2012 and later. So that piece of this is very similar to what the governor had done in the unallotment process. And Mr. Chair and members, or Madam Chair and members, my apologies, Article 4 reflects forecast adjustments assuming a 73% shift for the current biennium.
Okay. Are you ready for questions now, Senator Cohen?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Questions? I think Senator Olson had a question.
I'll pass.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair?
Senator Robley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cohen, I just kind of want to go back to this cash flow issue. And so in order to take care of that, are we asking people who collect sales taxes to make earlier payments, estimated payments? And when does that start? Does that start this June?
Madam Chair, Senator Oberling, that's correct. What is being requested in this article is the acceleration of payments to the state to help with the cash flow. I don't know if anybody is here from management and budget who would like to offer a little bit of history, but it's my understanding that other states that have faced similar problems have done that. It's something that's unique for Minnesota, but that's a way that the governor has felt the cash flow could be best managed. And it certainly does put some imposition on citizens who aren't part of this process to be a part of the solution. Obviously, this doesn't increase payments of vendors to the state. It does change the calendar. And I can't speak for management and budget or revenue. I'm assuming that there's going to be a little bit of slack offered to folks to make sure they understand the new system.
And Madam Chair?
I think that Mr. Mossman has something to add to help with this question, so why don't we take him next?
Mr. Chair and members, just to amplify Senator Roebling, I'm not if this is helpful to maybe the question that you're getting at. As you know, we do accelerate sales tax payments across fiscal years and bienniums in some cases from July into June as a budget balancing mechanism, and that is part of the law. In the cash flow, in this cash flow language brought forward by MMB, what is happening is that for sales taxes are generally collected in 1 month and then remitted near the end of the following month. And for large, so in all cases, we're talking about taxes that the businesses have collected, and this is accelerating within the month, them remitting a portion of the sales tax collections to the state a bit earlier in the month than they would under current law.
And
so it doesn't help budget balance. It only helps cash flow within the month.
And it's by 2 days, so instead of being due on June 30th, it's due on June 28th. Is that what I'm reading? Or, and is it the same percent Do they currently remit 90%, or are we increasing that amount too? I think it's the same, though.
90% by the 14.
Mr. Mossman?
Ms. Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I think it's 6 days. I'm not from the 20th.
Page 2.
Page 2, from the 20th to the 14th on page 2. Is that where you're at? Line 27, it's currently the 20th of the month, and this would move it to the 14th.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I see that there. But I was also looking at 317 to 321, trying to understand that part.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, I don't know if there's anybody here on Saturday morning from management and budget who...
We can't hear you.
I wasn't sure if there's anybody here from management and budget.
Is there anyone here?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Watson.
Just looking at the language, you see the difference between the language on page 2 that Mr. Mossman just referred to and the language on page 3 is that it requires the... In line 319, the remission to be by electronic means, so that the bigger remitters are going to have to send electronically. But it's the same dates, moving from the 20th to the 16th.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, I see where there is a reduction, I think the same as the governor made for county aides. But I don't see a corresponding provision for local government aids. What do you plan to do with local government aids, and how is that going to be handled?
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, as I indicated, this is a work in progress. The amendment I'll have on the floor Monday, if the bill passes out of here, will have an LGA figure. And again, that's a part of the that article that we could not just have the time to include for this morning, but it will be in here.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I'm looking on 318 and 319 in the sentence that among other things, says that the funds should be remitted by electronic means. And I think it would be easier to read if we would move by electronic means from where it is on 319 to after the word remit on line 318. So I would move that. It just doesn't make sense sticking at the end where it is.
Senator Cohen.
So it would be must remit by electronic means, all liabilities, blah, blah.
Madam Chair, as a matter of construction, I have no objection to that amendment. I am unsure as a matter of substance if that would make a difference, but we can, Mr. Watson, I don't know if
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, I think that's a fine change, but I think in the interest of time, what we were going to try to do is identify corrections like that were needed here and then incorporate them.
Fix them later.
The,
yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay, let's move it.
Any further discussion of the amendment?
In the big scheme.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at the spreadsheet here with the proposed cuts, and I don't really see anything for the legislature or other constitutional offices.
Senator Roebling, are you speaking to the amendment? We have an amendment pending.
Yes.
It's a delete all amendment, yes.
Well, I thought we had an amendment to the amendment.
No, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw it.
All right.
Mr. Watson will deal
sorry.
With it in the...
Okay.
It's going to be in the
I'm just trying
right.
to keep us on task here. Senator Roebling, I guess the amendment's...
We're not doing
the
that.
Amendment has been withdrawn.
Just looking at the proposed cuts and seeing that, the governor's office has a proposed cut, administration department, but the legislature or other constitutional offices don't have any. Was that intentional or something you omitted?
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling. A couple parts of the answer. Obviously, there were significant legislative and judicial cuts in my previous supplemental finance bill. This bill, the cuts you see were handled by
the governor's purported unallotments. And constitutionally, the governor cannot unallot the legislature or the judiciary. And so, you know, the attempt was to try to adopt what the governor had, had done originally with
governor,
his cuts.
Pardon? In part what the governor has
suggested. Right. And so in terms of agencies, he couldn't have done that last year with the legislature or the judiciary.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
But the legislature can do it. You know, and we're not adopting the governor's full unallotment anyway, so we could address that and include it in our budget.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Again, I haven't had time these last 48 hours, to be honest, to deal with a lot of the details of the bill. I've done that as best I can, but it's not – I've been pretty busy.
Senator Senjum, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Cohen.
I don't like it.
Senator Cohen, seems like we're chasing a $2.962 billion problem with the $1.873 billion solution, at least at this point. Is that to suggest that as this thing moves forward that Senator Bach is going to have to fix some of this as well?
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, I'm not sure if you'd heard me earlier, that this is what I anticipate to be a partial bill. It will be a complete bill when we fit all these other pieces in by Monday morning. And again, let me repeat for members. The problem, as Senator Senjum points out, is $2.962 billion. This part, this amendment, which admittedly is incomplete, is $1.873 billion. Excluded from that, from the 2.9, is Senator Berglund's, the chairman's, $114 million. That's the target established for the separate Health and Human Services Conference Committee, but fits into the overall solution. As Senator Fredrickson has pointed out, there's nothing here for the LGA cuts, and that is, I believe, $293 million. There are additional – there will be proposed additional local AIDS cuts, the renter's credit at 52.3, the state forest lands at 4.3. There was a proposed cut to higher education of $100 million. There were proposed cuts by the governor of $205 million to Health and Human Services. What will be in this bill on Monday is a total of $160 million because the chairman, Sarah Berglund, is carrying in her bill some of the other proposed cuts in the Health and Human Services bill. Additionally, in some of the going back and forth, there will be a one-time cut of $40 million to the Closed Landfill Investment Fund, which is something we had utilized in the supplemental finance bill. And then the balance, which I believe is $433 million, will be filled by new revenue. So of the total bill of, I don't know, I haven't done the arithmetic as we're talking, I could, but it would appear that
Madam Chair?
You know, the revenue piece is going to be 7-8%.
Madam Chair, a couple questions here. Are you including the $14 million target for education, or is that – that has been omitted here? What's happening there? And then I have one more question relative to
– Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that's not included.
That's not included. Yeah, and then Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, in the HHS, you said there were some of the unallotments that were included. Are they counted in the $114 million that's in the conference committee report?
Madam Chair, there some will be, yes.
They will be part of that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Senator Berglund, Madam Chair, could speak to that better than I could.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, what was the last item, that some investment fund? Which investment fund was that, the $40
million? The Closed
Senator
Landfill
Cohen.
Investment Fund.
Oh, Closed Landfill. All right.
Is a fund for contaminated land.
Yeah, no, I understand. I just didn't hear the words.
Madam Chair, I should indicate, Senator Olson, we will have language that parallels exactly the language we have in the supplemental finance bill that mandates repayment of that fund.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Part of my question was what Senator Olson asked, but Senator Cohen and Senator Stump on page 14, we had some controversy earlier over the alternative facilities bonding aid. Senator Stump had proposed further cuts in that. Is this cut on 14, 16, and 2010? Was that part of the unallotment? Is that a new cut?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, there is no cut assumed in that appropriation. Everything in that article is just a forecast reduction. So because that's a shifted program, what you're seeing there is a shift reduction.
Okay.
So it's a cash flow issue for all those districts that receive aid, but it is not an entitlement.
These are
change.
All the article is all shift reduction.
So that would be 100%.
Okay.
Senator Anderson.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Nowen, I think you probably answered this question too, but I presume then there's no cuts to Head Start in here either.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, there is no cuts to. I think this is a separate issue from what we've been dealing with on the other bill.
Madam Chair and
Senator Cohen.
Members, the cut you see reflected in this bill is, I believe, do we have a cut to the agency in here somewhere? Madam Chair, Mr. Mossman.
Senator Cohen, the $1 million cut to the agency is in this bill. Yes,
that was another floating piece last night.
And to amplify that a little bit, so whatever reductions were proposed for the agency as part of when the governor was proposing on allotments, those are in the bill. In addition to that, the governor had recommended in this legislative session an additional reduction to the agency. Both of those items are in this bill.
Any further questions or discussion? Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on the bill?
Well, Madam Chair, if there are no further questions and no testimony, I'd move that House File 2037 as amended be recommended to pass.
A motion has been made that the bill should be passed. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I believe that completes the agenda for today's meeting. Senator Cohen?
That's correct.
So the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
No.
For the floor. Our cart.